Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4, packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Is it just me, or has TV gotten really complicated? I'm either endlessly searching for my favorite shows or subscribing to a dozen different streaming services to make sure I can watch everything I love. And I'm not even saving that much money compared to my old cable bill. Thankfully, Philo has changed all that for me. One service, all the stuff I need. Philo's got current seasons of the shows I can't miss live on networks like Paramount, A&E, MTV, Discovery, and TLC. Classics like The Office, Martin, and Friends that I never get sick of, and all of the incredible originals on AMC Plus, from Mad Men to Orphan Black. Don't forget their library of more than 75,000 movies and shows, all of which I can save and re-watch anytime for a whole year. Never miss a minute of shows like Gypsy Rose, Life After Lockup on Lifetime, Yellowstone, or Fatal Attraction. Best of all, with Philo, you get all this for just $28 a month. No contracts, no hassles. Just one subscription and a world of entertainment. So go to philo.tv and check it out for a free 7-day trial. That's philo.tv to start watching. It's better
over here. Now at T-Mobile, get 4 5G phones on us and 4 lines for $25 a line per month when you switch with eligible trade-ins. All on America's largest 5G network.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees and $10 device connection charge. Phones via 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on a required finance agreement due. Bill credits end if you pay off devices early. See T-Mobile.com.
Mathematically, the one seed is an option. You're playing for the one seed if you're Buffalo. And that is not even a secondary thought. Once the one seed becomes mathematically no longer available, that's when I think you become very conscious of, okay, who can we preserve? How can we help them get a little bit healthier, physically and mentally refreshed to allow us to go play our absolute best football on that 1 month tourney, essentially.
All right, that was Dan Orlovsky. He was on One Bills Live yesterday. And you can listen to that interview in full. WGR550.com on demand audio. Welcome back. Hour two here underway. Nate Geary and Derek Kramer. We're filling in for Jeremy and Joe today. And talking Bills, Lions. Wrapped up a little bit of conversation about Bills, Rams last week. If you want to get your thoughts in, lessons you feel like you learned from last week that you want to take into this week. You know, obviously the game plan this week, I think, is defensively is going to look a lot like it did last week. I mean, this right now is a Detroit Lions team, much like I really like. Obviously, I like Kyren Williams. He's a Notre Dame player. I love Notre Dame. He's, you know, I like Kyren Williams a lot. He's a damn good running back, though.
He's been playing well.
It's a damn good running back. It's a good running. It's a good running team. A good running game in Los Angeles. This is a different level, though, of a running attack. This is the best running attack they'll face all season. The second best, they did not bode well against in Baltimore. Different style of a running game, but the issues, I think, of how Detroit is going to press in motion. I saw something from Anthony over at Cover One, talked about how the Rams are second in the league in motion use. Detroit's third. And those motions really, really press the responsibilities of these Bills zone defenders. Like, when you're constantly motioning, what it does is it requires your defensive backs to communicate perfectly. They've got to be able to pass off responsibilities. They've got to be able to change where their alignments are based on the formations. And when the Rams were going 3-by-1, sometimes 4-by-1, it created huge gaps, huge spaces in zone coverage that you're not normally used to seeing in these Bills zone defenses. And that, I think, will be the big thing they look at on film to say when this team, when they're going to run zone, they're going to use Amon-Ra St. Brown a lot like they used Puka Nacua. You could expect that. Using him in motion, motioning him, And don't you think for a second that Ben Johnson didn't watch how the Bills defended those jet sweeps to Puka Nacua? I think you can almost book it that Amon-Ra St. Brown's going to get one of those jet sweeps in this game. Those little handoffs right around the right off the snap, and AJ Epenesa and Greg Rousseau, they're going to have to maintain the edges in the run game in this game.
Mm-hmm.
But this is a big game for the linebackers. This is a big game for the interior part of the defensive line. That interior defensive line needs to have a huge bounce back game from Ed Oliver, from Daquan Jones. Daquan Jones in that game last week, first play of the game, blows up, and you're like, oh, okay. And then we definitely didn't see it again. So the interior part of this defensive line, I think you're going to see a lot of Austin Johnson. It would not surprise me if Dwayne Carter is inactive for this game. He played last week, first game back since coming off of the IR with the wrist injury. Some mixed results there.
Left something to be desired on a defensive line that really all left a lot to be desired.
I wonder in this game, do you consider like a practice squad elevation from like an Eli Ankou?
Or Jordan Phillips.
Because Quentin Jefferson's a little smaller. He's in that Dewan Smoot role. I think they need some beef on the inside. It would not shock me at all. It might actually be the play is elevating Eli Ankou for this game.
Yeah, Ankou or Phillips in for this game would be a lot better for the Bills when it comes to the run defense. But you talk about motion and how Detroit does a lot of the similar things. This is going to be, I saw you say on Twitter that it's going to be a lot of sleepless nights for Sean McDermott, Bobby Babich, and the defensive staff.
The next couple of nights.
I definitely do not envy Sean McDermott and Bobby Babich. They're going to be up quite late.
The good news is that they got a lot of practice on what not to do.
Yeah.
Against the Rams. So I'm hoping that they have a response here. When it comes to the run game, Detroit, with Gibbs and Montgomery, Sonic and Knuckles, as they've dubbed themselves, I'm expecting that they're going to get theirs. Because what the Bills' main philosophy is, we're going to keep everything in front of us. Not get beat deep. And even if that means letting the run game dictate a little bit of that pace, how do you deal, though, with a team like that? You got to keep up. What they didn't do in Baltimore, and in the second quarter into the start of the third against LA, you weren't keeping pace. And that's what you need to do against teams that are running the ball successfully against you. You got to keep the pressure on, make sure that they know that they can't just get away with doing whatever they want, because here comes the Bills and the offense coming back on the other side, and they're making your defense's life miserable. They have to make sure whatever the Lions give at them, the offense has to give it back. That's how you keep up. That's how you succeed. That's how you win today. Win on Sunday.
I also think there's something to be said about not, again, I want to stop short of saying like the Bills offense has really any blame for the result of last week's game. I mean, they played unbelievably. You score 42 points, you should win a lot of football games. You should win most of your games.
You played near perfect football.
But in the beginning part of the game, when the game was starting to get away from them and the defense was struggling the way that it was, that's really where you needed the offense to put together and sustain some drives, and they didn't in the first half. There was three and outs. There were just, when they get in these sort of sleuths early in the game where they're running on first down and then trying to run on second down and all of a sudden you got third and eight, That puts any offense, the Bills, the Chiefs, anybody, when you start putting offenses in third and longs, it's hard for these offenses to operate, for them to maintain drives. And listen, the Rams didn't deal with that at all. I mean, they were in the first half, I think 5 for 6 on third down, and all of them were very manageable. First of all, they were first down merchants. They were insanely efficient on first down all game. The Bills have not been overly efficient on first down. That's the one area where if you're going to run the ball, like, they've got to be more effective. I think the last 2 weeks, early on in that San Fran game, same thing. They did not really run the ball particularly well. Then, obviously, James Cook breaks his big one. I just think in this game, in order for the Bills to help their defense right now, they've got to be able to early in games run the football, extend drives, and if you get the ball second and you're down 7-0, you need to, you got to match the score, which they did last week. They matched that 7-0 score. But then they got behind. It was 10, I think it was 10-7 and then 17-7 at one point.
The block punt, yeah.
The block punt, and the block punt made it 17-7. And you're sitting there like, I'm not blaming the offense here, but they could be more efficient on first down to help their defense. And especially throughout that game, when the game started getting closer, you needed some longer drives to help protect your defense. And I think that's what Sean McDermott was alluding to in his post-game comments. One he needed a run game to help protect his defense.
And one of the things there about protecting the defense is true, but also it's almost like the predictability of the run is coming. With how the Bills and their a little bit of pattern recognition is showing up in their run game, and when they want to run the football, they typically show it.
And they don't have this hugely diverse run game.
No.
It's 10 core concepts, maybe less. You know, out of shotgun, it's the, you know, it's the dives. There's some pin and pull action, but it's duo. It's basically hand the ball off and have them read blocks. It's not a super dynamic. It's not a super complex running attack where you've got, it's not the Ravens running attack where you've got, you know, multiple guys pulling and, you know, they do use pullers for sure. But where I'm getting at is on first down, when you kind of run the same plays over and over again, they become a little easier to defend. And I would like to see, I'm not here to tell you that I think they shouldn't run the football, and quite the contrary, actually. I'm actually agreeing with Sean McDermott that if this is what their defense is going to be, which I'm not sure that last week is a representation of what they will be.
No, I feel like it's the anomaly of what happened in the defense there.
Let's get connected with our fans. Let's get Bob in Connecticut, who's been waiting patiently. Bob, you're on with Derek and Nate. Good morning to you.
Hey, Nate. Hey, Derek. How's everything going?
Good,
you guys are holding it down. Joe, if you're listening, get well soon. Jeremy, if you're listening, enjoy your vacation. One of the things that I was thinking about was, there was that game. I can't remember who they played against. I'm speaking of Detroit. They played against this team. They won the game, but Goff threw 5 interceptions. Do you remember who they played?
Houston.
It was Houston. All right. Remember the defense that Houston was using against him?
I don't know the defense. I don't know. Like, they run some man coverage. Like, they're not a full man team, but they definitely run some man.
Right. But I believe in those interceptions, they were running a zone. And when Green Bay played them last week, they were running a zone. The one thing that Goff, it's almost like a leak. He has a hard time against zone defenses. So if we're able to expose Goff with that, I believe we could get some takeaways. You were touching on that, Nate, a little bit. My concern is, of course, you know, Sonic and Knuckles. And, I mean, that's the obvious right there. And, of course, St. Brown and Laporta. If we can lock down Laporta a little bit and hold Brown down a little bit, because we've hailed down two of the other best wide receivers in the league, who are Waddle and Hill.
Yep.
You know, and I mean, we could do the same thing. I mean, after coming off this game, I believe the defense understands that they messed up and they know what to do, and the coaching staff knows what to do. I'm not really concerned. I believe we can play against this team because the Bears stayed with them, and we all know how the Bears play. And Green Bay played tough against them as well. And yep. Buffalo has a very, very strong offense. Now, the one thing that I would definitely like to hear is I would like Cook to run the ball a little bit, but also get Ray Davis involved more. We can't always rely on Cook. We got to get Ray Davis in there, and Ty Johnson does a great job as well.
Ty Johnson, Rob, has been, I mean, just an unbelievable pass-catching back for them. Thanks for the call, Rob.
Perfect change of pace back, really.
They just have such a solid trio. I agree with Rob there. I do want to see the ball predominantly in James Cook's hands. He is their big play threat. He's their best running back.
Yes.
But, you know, on third down, sprinkling in some first down runs, a couple of, you know, two or three three-year drives a game where you kind of kick it over to Ray Davis. But, yeah, to me, though, here's the big difference between that Houston game and some of the other games this season where, you know, that was their outlier. You know, he threw 5 interceptions in that game.
They still won, though.
They still won, but that was their outlier in terms of turnovers. But I don't know that I want to look necessarily to the coverage in that game. They have Danielle Hunter. They have one of the best – pass rushers in the league.
That's the thing. I looked up the quarterback hits of this game. They had 6 on Jared Goff. Last week's performance from the defensive line will not cut it against many teams in the National Football League when you hit a quarterback 3 times.
Definitely not this one.
And Goff is not even like Stafford. Stafford can extend plays within the pocket and manipulate it to his needs. Jared Goff is far more flat-footed than even Matthew Stafford. If you're not going to be able to get to a guy who is statuesque and probably the last effective statuesque quarterback in the National Football League, you're not going to have a good time. Because like you said, we've had games where we've seen Jared Goff go near perfect or even perfect in a stretch of run. It just, you've got to get pressure. Your defensive line has to be better than what it was because it set the tone for the whole game against the Rams. And if it does not improve, there is a problem and major questions come playoff time.
Yeah, and I think we talk a lot about, or when the Bills defensively are at their best, you hear the saying, you know, they're marrying their coverage with their pass rush. And you didn't have any of those. You didn't have either of them.
Based on Sunday, there was a divorce.
You got no coverage and you got no pass rush. So for this game, the thing that I really want to see from Buffalo is, A, you need Greg Rousseau to have a game. You need him to press the pocket around Jared Goff. Your point about Jared Goff being pretty immobile is correct. And like, as much as this might be an important game for the interior defensive line in the run game, this is why this game becomes that much harder for the interior part of the defensive line, is that's really where I think you can disrupt Jared Goff the most, is right up the center. And you've got to really try to find a steady balance between getting upfield in the pass game and staying at home and you know, making sure your run gaps and you're fundamentally sound in the run game. Because if you don't, this is just going to be another game where they give up 40 points.
I had mentioned how Ed Oliver likes to get upfield, and that's his style, his aggression. In the pass game, that's going to be very useful against a player like Jared Goff. So I don't know how much needs to be changed necessarily with what he's doing when it comes to matchup and opponent here this time around. But this would be a good time for a nice rebound here for Ed Oliver and the defensive tackles here. I really think that there's an opportunity to be had to start messing with Jared Goff a little bit. But if you can't get it done, he's going to pick you apart.
He will absolutely pick you apart, too. And I think he mentioned Sam Laporta, too.
Yeah.
He hasn't been a huge...
been that kind of year for him.
He's kind of had the same kind of disappointing second season. Like, you thought after year one, I mean, what, 82 catches I think he had year one? Like, you thought, okay, this guy's going to be the next... It's going to be Kelsey, Kincaid, or it's going to be Laporta, Kincaid, and like some of these young guys. And obviously, Bowers now, the rookie, is having a... you'd have to steal the rookie of the year away from him with a, like, it's locked. I'll say this. Laporta, although there should be concern about him and like, you're going to want to, the offense really doesn't flow through him. Like, no. Right now, the guy, obviously, it's
Ben Johnson schemes him open more effectively, I do believe.
Yes, that's right.
So you got to look out for that.
Jamison Williams is a guy that I'm worried about in this game, though,
yes,
for sure. He's got the foot speed. In the screen game, that's really where I'm concerned, too, because if he gets open space, he's fast. He's tough to get down. But they also got, what's his name from Denver? Tim Patrick. And he's turned into a nice number three receiver for them.
Yeah, the more that they're able to complement their roster.
Because they lost Reynolds.
Yes.
And they replaced him with Tim Patrick right before the start of the season when Denver kind of let him walk. And he's been, I think he had 2 touchdowns last week. He's been coming along for them.
Yeah, and Tim Patrick, 4th on their team in receiving yards as well. He's got 349 on the year on 27 catches. The thing is that he's also very efficient. Like how we've seen with Khalil Shakir, how Mac Hollins is developing into a receiver down the depth chart that is getting a lot more efficient with his target share. Tim Patrick is doing that for the Lions this year. Again, the biggest way to keep pressure on them, though, when it comes to trying to force Jared Goff into mistakes, is The offense has to be on beat. And I know that it's not fair asking the offense, hey, you got to keep things up at 11 where you were from the second half on in LA. But there's going to be times where the offense needs to win a game. And they almost got that on Sunday. But then the special teams added one extra wrinkle in there that really makes it harder, as you said, win probabilities. It really makes it harder for a team to win. Special teams cannot have that kind of gaffe again on Sunday.
803-0550, the number to call if you'd like to get your thoughts in. We've got Joe Marino coming up here in just under 10 minutes. So we'll kind of get through the matchup that's coming up this week against the Lions with Joe, get his thoughts on the defensive play, how they bounce back, all that good stuff. So we'll... you won't want to miss that coming up here again. That's at 7:30, 8 o'clock, Lindy Ruff. At 8:30, we will have Sal Capaccio join us looking at this matchup as well. He was off yesterday, so we'll have him back today. And then is it 9 o'clock?
At 9 o'clock, yep.
That's when I've got all this stuff listed out. Okay, that's right, 9 o'clock. Nolan Bianchi of the Detroit News joins us at 9. We'll get the Lions side of things. So, you know, we've been talking a lot about Jameson Williams, this offense. Haven't talked a lot about their defense, I think in large part because the names aren't the names that
the names are missing.
With. Yeah, there's just a lot of names missing.
There's names missing, and it's brutal for them, but yet they're still holding strong at 11-1, and the reason for that is the offense is able to dictate pace and dictate script.
Brian Branch is also a stud.
Yes, he is very good on the outside for them, and probably one of the better second-round picks that you're going to see. And he did it right away, too. Rookie season,
yes.
Game one, Kansas City, pick six. So he kind of came onto the scene almost immediately. And everyone was, at the time, lauding the draft pick. Proves it right away in his career. But you can beat the Lions on defense. You can take advantage of a very banged up front seven. Like you said, what was it? The eight players that started the season on defensive end or defensive tackle are not playing in this game?
There, you said for Detroit?
Was it the eight of them that were
originally? Top eight, yes. Their top eight.
Their top eight are missing. Your defensive leader in Anzalone is gone in the middle.
Derek Barnes, their other starting linebacker, is gone. And then Malcolm Rodriguez, who was filling in, gone.
Holy. Like, if you don't take advantage of this... It's a bit of a it would be a shame.
It would
quite
be
frankly.
Disappointing.
It would be disappointing for a game that's already kind of lost a little bit of luster. The Bills losing to LA made the one seed a lot harder to obtain, I should say, and because nobody's helping out with the Kansas City side of things, it made it even much harder to foresee that the Bills will do that. But Howard picked it. So I believe.
As long as Howard picked it, I believe. That's right.
Yes. As long as Howard picked that the Chiefs will lose the one seed, I'm here for it.
All right. 803-0550. Joe Marino joins us next in the Western Hotline. Don't go anywhere. This is Nate. That's Derek. And we're filling in for Jeremy and Joe today. This is WGR.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Right now, my ballot would still be Saquon 1,
really?
Josh 2. It's going to be, I thought Josh was brilliant, but they did lose and he had that flop. And Saquon stayed on
what?
Pace.
The flop.
And I'm just, everything matters. Every little piece matters.
Oh, boy.
I love Nick Wright. Say what you will, the guy's good at what he does.
He's grown on me, honestly. He, like, knowing full well that it's a bit. And it is like him playing a legitimate heel. And then you go listen to his podcast and like, oh, yeah, no, you know ball. You're just doing this to make people angry and it's working.
To rile them up. All right, on the Western Hotline, joining us for his weekly segment, Joe Marino from Locked on Bills. Good morning to you, Joe. Good to talk to you.
What's up, guys? Good to be on. Hope you're doing well.
We are. Nate and Derek here in for Jeremy and Joe this week. And Before we, I don't know, I guess officially flush last week, we'll have Sal Capaccio on at 8:30, so we won't fully flush this game for the show's sake, but for the segment's sake, kind of your, you know, you had an opportunity to go back, watch the All-22, you know, put together, I think, some opinions on things you saw live. What was maybe the thing defensively, Joe, that stood out to you last week that maybe you were surprised about, especially when you consider, you know, this being a Sean McDermott defense that really doesn't have these sorts of lapses, especially in the pass game?
Yeah, I think framing it as what surprised me the most is how much better the Rams receivers were than the Bills' corners. It was a matchup of good on good. I mean, I think the strength of the Bills' defense is their corners and Taron Johnson, Rasul Douglas, and Christian Benford. And Cooper Kupp and Puka Nacua got the best of them. And I figured that would be a reasonable matchup for the Bills. You figured there'd be some back and forth, but it was very one-sided. Those Rams receivers won. Matthew Stafford won in a big way. You typically don't see quarterbacks carve up the Bills' defense like Matthew Stafford did, but the dude was on one, man. They converted 12 third downs. Third and fourth downs, they converted 11 passing first downs. I mean, the third down conversions were just absolutely outstanding. And the Bills' defense, it'll be a little leaky at times, but they normally can tighten the screws in the red zone or they can get a big play at some point. Never happened. Not even close. And so I think for the formula to not only not work, but like not even for a second, it didn't work. And then on top of that, the Bills are on the road. They have a punt block return for a touchdown. They can't get a single meaningful play made on defense. They lose by two. And Bills Mafia, boy, the conversations we're having today, boy, are they different than the ones we were having before kickoff on Sunday.
There's no doubt about that. And listen, I think part of it is a little bit of a things that you're just not used to seeing are you listen, if they had run for 225 yards and beat them that way, I think Bills fans probably aren't singing the same tune, but I think they watched a team do something that they don't normally watch teams do, Joe, which is beat them soundly through the air. And even over the top, I mean, that the double pass interference play would have been the second time this year they got beat deep, and that just feels like something that never happens, Joe. And like I think about maybe what you're more concerned about going into a week like this. And I probably know the question, or I know the answer because of how good this rushing attack is for Detroit. But like, I think about in a matchup like this, knowing how much the defensive line struggled, I feel a little bit more confident that the defensive backs, especially the corners, are going to have a bounce back performance, maybe specifically Taron Johnson, Joe. But I guess my concern today moving forward and what has been all season is the up and down lack of consistency at both the interior and exterior of the defensive line.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, I think at the core of what made the passing game so opportunistic for Stafford and company was the fact that the Bills didn't stop the run. And I know that metrically you're going to see, 42 rushes and 3.3 yards per carry, but that doesn't tell the story. A lot of that production came before the Bills started to make an adjustment. And the problem is the adjustments killed the pass defense, right? They started to roll down the safety. They started to play a little bit more man coverage. They got manipulated by a lot of play fakes. And, you know, because they ran the ball so well, the second level was getting down into the run fit, and now you don't have an underneath zone and you're making it even harder on your defensive backs. And so I think where I become encouraged, I mean, obviously I have concerns about the defensive line. Anybody that's listened to me for the last 5 years knows I have concerns about the defensive line. But I think the fact that the Bills were so susceptible to the pass, which is uncharacteristic, I think it's an outlier game, Nate. I mean, I'm not trying to like spin this to a overly positive, but like you said, that doesn't happen. And I think it's, you know, that the NFL world is one game a week and you react and go crazy based on it. And every game is really, really meaningful, but that's not a normal script against the Bills. And it's so much more than just the defense, in my opinion. Like, I think people are so focused in on that. And obviously it's a huge problem, but they had a punt block return for a touchdown. They couldn't manage the middle eight of that game well at all. They had a chance to double dip. They couldn't convert a third and two.
Yep.
Coming out of the half. They couldn't. Josh and Khalil couldn't connect on that third down over the middle. The deep shot to Mac Hollins where two plays later, it's the punt return for a touchdown. It's like, man, there's a lot of things here that are pretty uncharacteristic. And so maybe it's just an uncharacteristic game. You learn from it and play the next one.
You learn from it, you play the next one, Joe, but the main part of it that seems the most encouraging, even with the defense struggling as much as it did, is that it became a game. Like you said, the middle eight, they really mishandled it, and it seemed to have ultimately cost them. But this offense, the passing attack, we saw among its best that we've ever seen it under Josh Allen and Sean McDermott.
Yeah, I mean, this game was 31-14 with 5:39 left in the third quarter. That's about a wrap for most teams, right? I mean, that's it. It's not for the Bills, not with Josh Allen. And I think that's where the sting comes. You know, Josh Allen's maybe the best player in the NFL. I mean, certainly not lower than two or three. And whenever the Bills lose, usually Josh Allen plays really great because Josh Allen's an amazing football player. And there becomes this massive upswell of, well, get mad at everything because it's taking away from Josh Allen, who's the greatest player in Bills history and the best chance the Bills have ever had to win a Super Bowl. And so we're really hard on everything else. And, man, it's the NFL. Like, the other teams get paid, too. They want to win. And the Bills are having a great season. They won 7 in a row prior to this one. They're 10-3. The division's clinched. They're probably going to be a top 2 seed. The sky is not falling. It was a tough game, a heartbreaker. But, you know, I don't think that game defines the 2024 Buffalo Bills.
Joe, I do want to keep on the positive light of that game, and with regards to the passing attack, I've really liked and noticed the marked improvement of efficiency from players like a Mac Hollins in this offense, where he started off really rough and there was a lot of targets but not a lot of receptions. And now you're also kind of seeing that similar arc happening with Amari Cooper. They're trying to get him more familiarized with Allen. They feed him 16 targets. He catches 14 targets. He catches 6 of them for 95 yards. Do you see a similar uptick in efficiency coming for Amari Cooper heading into the later stage of the season as well?
Yeah, 100%. And obviously, that was a big storyline coming into the season with Josh having pretty much just Khalil Shakir as the only receiver that's caught a pass from him in a game prior. So, you know, getting on the same page with new weapons was a story to go into the season. And then, of course, you add Cooper. You know, middle of the season, and now you're doing it again. And then, of course, injuries to different guys at different times. It's been an unsettled group around Josh Allen throughout the season. But, yeah, you know, I was a little surprised, actually, that the target-to-catch ratio was what it was for Cooper because they were so close on so many. And I think any of the misconnections were a couple of times where Josh was kind of getting outside the pocket and improvising, and Cooper was maybe a step off, and they just barely missed, or – you know, one deep shot where they were on the same page, or just, I'm talking a yard off on another one. So I think they're very, very close. And I get excited to think about, you know, how that chemistry is evolving. Of course, what exists with Khalil Shakir, what we're seeing from Mac Hollins. And then, boy, what does this look like when Kincaid and Coleman are healthy? Yep. To go with, you know, the X factors like a Kurtis Samuel, like a Dawson Knox, like your running backs. You know, I know it's week 15, but it feels like there's a lot of meat left on the bone for this really good passing offense to be even better.
I want to ask you about some of the, I don't know, time management, coaching aspects of this game, Joe. And, you know, I think for a lot of folks, social media is a tough place to really catch a gauge of actually how people feel, because it's like, you know, people are saying, well, you know, it's not great. We would like to see some of these time management mistakes, you know, get cleaned up, not rear their head every once in a while. People are like, oh, so you want him fired and you think he's the worst coach ever? It's like, no, I don't think those things. I don't want Sean McDermott fired. I think he's a great coach. But it is things that kind of continually pop up, and things that I feel like now, with the experience that he's had, no one questions, Joe, how much he's sort of grown in the aggressiveness area and using his quarterback, keeping the ball in his hands in big moments. I mean, 3-4 weeks ago, right, at home against Kansas City, that fourth down play was game decider, right? And that, the coach has to make that decision. But I don't know if it's between the accepting the penalty on 3rd and 7 that makes it, what, third or fourth or 4th and 13 or 4th and 14 or something like that, then they run off another 10, 15 seconds, get it, and then you wasted a bunch of time there. Then, you know, whether or not you like or hate the call of the quarterback sneak, not being prepared to immediately get up and run a play without wasting that time out, or just as Tom Brady said in the broadcast, throw the ball four times or have Josh Allen scramble it and run it in, and don't waste that timeout. Whatever you do, you can't leave that situation with, you know, using a timeout and then having nine guys on the field in that pump block scenario. Where I came on this, Joe, is I'm not necessarily angry at Sean McDermott. I don't think Sean McDermott lost them the game because of those things. What I do think, Joe, is that they sort of robbed themselves of an opportunity for Josh to be great. And I think if you look at the great teams, the Chiefs namely, they never stop themselves from giving, whether it's 5 seconds, 7 seconds, it doesn't matter. They always give Patrick Mahomes the opportunity to be great. And I just want to, when you have Josh Allen, Joe, I just need my coach to always have in mind that these decisions should always equate to giving Josh Allen an opportunity to be special.
Yeah, I think that's a great way to frame it, Nate. And I really appreciate the way that you said that, hey, those things didn't lose the Bills the game. The Bills lost the game way sooner than any of the things that, you know, people are focusing in on. But they are meaningful, and I do think that it does take away from, you know, maybe a margin that's very slim, but giving yourself your best opportunity. I find myself most frustrated with the decision to accept the penalty, mostly because the time element that exists from allowing them to have another play, but also how you played it. If you're going to force them in a 3rd and 17 and you want to keep them back there, well, don't play it like it's 4th and 17. You know, play it like you want to keep them back there. And they played soft and gave up 11 yards, and then it's 4th and 5 and they give up 11 more yards. And like, that was very frustrating to me. Like, even if they go for it on the 4th and 5, don't take the time piece of it. So that was pretty frustrating to me. The quarterback sneak, I don't really have an issue with the quarterback sneak. It's a very highly effective play. Now, it was a full yard, which is meaningful. My issue is how they got to the quarterback sneak. Do your normal tush push, right? Like, they wind up motioning in Zach Davidson late to be the tush pusher. Do what you normally do, what you did on the next play, which is Ty Johnson and Matt Collins pushing them in. Like, that's what happens. And I don't really think that not calling the timeout was, like, I think that's where I would disagree with people. I think you had to call that timeout because defensive players are told to lay on top of bodies. They have to get the ball spot. You're going to lose a lot of time there. So either run the normal tush-push, or, like Tom Brady said, throw the ball and preserve the time. I think that's probably the better idea. I think if you run the ball there with the quarterback sneak and dunk it, I think you have to call the timeout. And then, I mean, nine players on the field, I mean, yeah, you're probably not going to get the punt block, but give yourself the best chance to do it, right?
Yep.
And so, yeah, plenty of frustrating things, but obviously the game lost much sooner than that.
Joe Marino on the Western Hotline. Joe, moving on to the challenges that the Detroit Lions present. They are 12-1 for a reason, and one of the big things being their dual-headed running attack, Sonic and Knuckles, Jahmyr Gibbs, David Montgomery. The Bills have been suspect at times to power run defenses. We already talked a little bit about how this defensive line needs to rebound in a big way, and it would have to start here with a very efficient Lions rushing attack.
Yes, it's no small challenge this week. It's a huge challenge, and you know, maybe there's a silver lining to this where you experience a late season loss, which is pretty uncharacteristic. You know, a lot of times when the Bills lose late in the season, there is no tomorrow. It's a playoff loss. Haven't lost in December since 2021. So there is tomorrow. I think that's the good news. It happened in Week 14. There is tomorrow. And you want to talk about getting refocused and trying to give yourself the best chance to go get this number one seed if it's possible. Now you're staring at a date with the Detroit Lions, who have a rest advantage over the Bills. They played Thursday at their place. Obviously a team that you feel like is structurally designed to give you a lot of problems with not only their physical rushing offense that includes two good backs, but you know, they have a play action speed element to their offense that's difficult to deal with. And so, you know, I think the Bills, you want to talk about just like a very sobering refocus, this is your next challenge, might be the right team at the right time, but obviously the Bills are going to have to meet this moment, and it's probably going to be required that Josh Allen scores a good amount of points in this game for the offense. And you know, hopefully, if you are leaky on defense, that it's not a situation where you can't get a single clutch play, and maybe you can get one or two, give yourself a better chance to win this game, and certainly don't have a punt block for a touchdown.
No doubt about it. Thank you, Joe. We appreciate you as always, and look forward to hearing you next week.
All right, guys. Thanks so much.
All right, Joel Marino there on the Wester Hotline from Locked On Bills. We're going to take a timeout on the other side. We're going to move some things around. No Lindy at 8 a.m. this morning, so we're going to try to move some things around, maybe move Sal up to 8 as well. So we'll get that updated for you on the other side. This is WGR.
Time now for Worst Call Wednesday, brought to you by Roswell Park Comprehensive Cancer Center.
These experts on TV who nobody remembers what they did in their career, so in order for them to stay relevant, they have to make comments that keep them in the conversation. That wasn't going on in 2008, 2009. That was non-existent. You know, the Sports Center of my youth, you know, those guys made the highlights so much fun, and that's what they showed on Sports Center. Now it's all talk shows and people whose opinions are so important now, and they believe they're the celebrities now, they're the stars for just being able to talk about sports or give a take about sports, many of which are unfounded or asinine, as we all know. But that's the environment that we're in now.
Jets quarterback Aaron Rodgers on the Pat McAfee Show. I feel like I try to laugh at Aaron Rodgers at every opportunity. And has he ever seen a mirror? Because that really makes things entirely fascinating. Most of what Aaron Rodgers says is the worst call. And that is the worst call from Aaron Rodgers on the Pat McAfee Show. But one of the worst calls that you could make is skipping your recommended cancer screenings. To learn more about the potentially life-saving screening recommendations and guidelines, visit roswellpark.org/screening.
Man, just the lack of self-awareness that guy.
Yeah.
I don't know. I thought that there was some level of profound awareness that ayahuasca is supposed to give you when you do it. Apparently, it removes you from reality and then plants you in a different body, because there's just no way that Aaron Rodgers on ESPN, who has terrible takes and opinions, is talking about ESPN no longer being good because they have terrible takes and opinions. It's remarkable.
It's just him jumping into it. Like,
it's special. So special.
He is. Does he know what mirrors are?
It's kettle, meat, pot.
Yeah, exactly. He just. I'm so happy they stink. Just
not surprised, but I'm happy. 803-0550. Sal Capaccio joins the program next. Or as Pat McAfee said, the program. He joins it next, and we'll keep talking Bills-Lions. That's coming up here on WGR.